fun.
Law always reflects someone's morality. So if Christians are not involved in making sure it reflects their morality as a majority, according to polls, then it's going to reflect a lack of morality or some immorality. Because ultimately they're saying you have to hire whatever Satan worshiper, whatever cross-dresser you think might be immoral, that's against your religious belief. You are going to be forced to abandon your religious beliefs. So the law reflects somebody's, and it better be the majorities that believe in God.
Oh, what a Gohmert that guy is.
Oh, yeah. Of course, that is Louis Gohmert, that great Republican sage. Oh, my goodness. Well, hi, everybody. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for tuning in. We've got a huge, huge show tonight. We've got, of course, as you know, we're talking about HRC. We're talking about the trans community. We're talking about what went down last week at the Supreme Court rally. We've got the people who we need to talk to. We talked to John Becker last week, formerly of Truth Wins Out. We got his take. This week, we've got Michael Cole Schwartz, Communications Director for the Human Rights Campaign. He'll be coming on in just a couple of minutes. After Michael, we've also got Brian John Ellicott. He is the guy who was holding the trans rights flag and was confronted by an HRC staffer and asked to take it down. Asked to move it out of the camera shot. We're going to be talking to him, and on top of all that, we've got Mike Rogers from Raw Story coming up in our second hour, so stick around for that. Boy, what a week, I'll tell you. You know, this story has really, it's drawn a lot of attention, and it's drawn more attention over the week. It's interesting. For example, when I first reported on this last Thursday, pretty much there wasn't much coverage of this among our more well-known LGBT media organs. Now it's getting coverage all over the place, thank goodness. We got a lot more attention on this, which is as it should be. And we're going to talk to some of the principals involved, and we're going to get some tough questions, and we're going to hopefully get some answers and see what comes of it. And I see that Michael Cole Schwartz is on the line. Hi, Michael. How are you? Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks. I want to get right to it because I know we're limited on time tonight. One of the first questions I want to ask you about is about what happened at the Supreme Court last Wednesday. Now, it's been widely reported that an HRC staffer, Karen Quimby, repeatedly asked someone who was holding a transgender rights flag to take down the flag and take it out of a camera shot. And when she was refused by this guy who was holding the flag, she then tried to block it from the cameras with a pride flag. And the first thing I really want to ask you about is the statement that it's been attributed to you. It came out of your office, I assume. And it kind of seemed a little funny to me because, well, first thing you said in this statement, and I'm going to read part of it, is it says that it was agreed that American flags in our program were the best way to illustrate this unifying issue. And also, skipping here, several people were asked to move who were carrying organizational banners or any flag that was not an American flag. And then you say, several people refused and were allowed to stay. The coalition welcomed the variety of signs and flags that were throughout the plaza that demonstrated the wonderful diversity of our community. And this is very puzzling to me because first you say that it was agreed upon that American flags were the best way to illustrate the issue. Then you say that the coalition welcomed the variety of signs and they demonstrated diversity. That seems to contradict, it seems to be a contradiction. How can both of these things be true?
Well, thanks for giving me an opportunity to sort of talk about this and hopefully answer some questions about it. To start out, it was the coalition's agreement that you know, no particular organization or other kind of signs or banners would be behind the podium, you know, which is something we all agreed upon because, you know, certainly there's 170 organizations in this coalition and everyone would have wanted, you know, their flag or their banner back there. And for the sake of simplicity and for having a simple patriotic message, the coalition all decided that they were only going to allow American flags to be behind the podium, which has the most visibility where the television cameras are pointed. So that part is what coalition staffers were trying to enforce that coalition agreement when asking people who were carrying flags or banners that were not American flags to move from behind the podium. Now, I don't know that the two statements you or those two sentences that you point out are necessarily at odds. You know, there is a particular agreement that everyone had about the use of the flags behind the podium, and, you know, there was no restriction or otherwise preference for what the signs and flags and banners would be outside of that area.
Okay. But there was also, we interviewed John Becker, who is formerly with Truth Wins Out, and he was actually physically at this rally, and I interviewed him last week, and he had something to say about what was going on with the American flags. I want to run this clip. Mike, could you run that clip, please?
It was such a loud, boisterous, exciting, you know, charged atmosphere that I happened to, I took note of something when I found it, when I heard something kind of discordant, and I turned around and I saw this staffer leaning over and talking to this person, and clearly trying to be quiet, and this person was replying back, you know, and saying, you know, indignantly and kind of, you know, shocked, and then saying, you know, and refusing, saying, no, I'm not going anywhere, and so after this staffer left, I said, well, what happened? What's going on? And this person told Jeremy and I that they were asked to remove their flag. And so, you know, and the reason that was given was that they didn't want it in the shot. And we were all very perplexed and offended and you know, and shocked, of course. And, yeah, then this incident happened again. This person returned and asked again for this person to voluntarily remove themselves from the camera shot behind the podium where all the speakers were. All non-American flags were asked to be removed. That doesn't jive with what I saw. Jeremy himself was holding a flag that was a non-American flag. It was you know, two interlocking rings that were rainbow colored, and so that's clearly not an American flag, and nobody wants to ask him to take it down. There was an incident where somebody came behind the all the speakers and tried to hoist up these huge signs that the coalition felt were off message, so they asked somebody who had a large pride flag to try to position themselves in front of this other person's massive signs to block the view. So in that case, the people were actually using a pride flag to try to have message consistency. So the idea that there were no, or the statement that there was no, you know, non-American flag present at that time is not what I saw and not what Jeremy saw and not true.
Why don't we take this one step at a time? You know, basically, there was this issue. Apparently, you said one thing at the beginning. Then there was another statement from Fred Sains a couple days later that basically said something very different. And I'm wondering if you can give some insight into what was going on there.
Well, I don't know that they are inconsistent. I grant you that they are different. And I think, you know, it's important to remember we were part of the coalition statement that was put out on Friday, you know, that apologized for the incident, and we reiterated that apology with a statement just from HRC on Monday. Now, to the point that John made in the clip, admittedly, that policy of wanting only American flags behind the podium was not consistently enforced, and that is true. We never said that there were only American flags, but that that was the coalition's desire that we were trying to put in place. So, you know, all we can continue going down this path. But at the end of the day, I do want to reiterate that we are sorry for the events that transpired. We certainly did not mean to single anyone out and you know, to be insensitive to the trans flag or the people who were there or any of the other folks involved. You know, this is a regrettable situation, and hindsight is 20/20. And I think in this case, we, you know, can look back at it now and say this was not properly handled, and we wish things had gone differently.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. But I would also point out, and you know, you well know this because we interacted together at the time, that this isn't the first time that an HRC staffer has taken it essentially upon, I'm assuming this is not obviously something that the organization approved of, but has literally taken it upon themselves to do something like this, to do something which was be considered discriminatory or unwelcoming or something. I experienced something, as you well know, at the HRC Gala in New York in 2011 that you invited me to, and there was a one individual who was working. I'm not sure if he was an actual staff member, but he was working for HRC, and there was a similar incident. I mean, and I'll ask you this honestly: is there a problem in HRC with getting people up to speed on issues that are not surrounding, let's be honest, marriage and other issues of key focus to upper middle class and wealthy gays and lesbians?
No, frankly, I think that deserves a direct answer. All of our staff is fully committed to the full range of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender issues that we work on. In this particular case of the flag, there was no slight meant against any individual or issue, particularly, you know, because it was a trans flag. It was just a policy that was being implemented without regard to what the actual content was. So I hope that this is not seen as an anti-trans incident. I certainly understand why one would have that perspective, but again, I want to reiterate that is not the heart that is behind what happened. And I think that, you know, to your larger point, our organization is 100% committed to all of these issues, and we try and carry that out every day.
Okay, fair enough. I want to switch gears a little bit, because, as you know, this incident has stirred up a lot of hard feelings from the past. A lot of people are talking about protests. There's been stuff on Facebook. There's been, it's reopened some old wounds between HRC and the trans community that we both know have been playing themselves out pretty quietly over the last few years. But what I decided to do when I was preparing for this interview was I read a lot. I read a lot of blog posts. I read a lot of Facebook. I read a lot of personal interactions, emails and stuff. And I tried to figure out, let's see if we can come up with some of the issues that trans people really have a problem with HRC about. And let's air them a little bit and see, you know, what can be done here. Now, I've broken them down into a few areas, and I'm going to hit you with the first one and this is one that I think virtually every person I spoke to mentioned, representation. Basically, HRC says it supports trans people, trans inclusion. You're 100%, as you said. Yet right now, HRC only has a single part-time trans executive board member, no trans staffers, and you can literally count the number of trans people who have actually worked for HRC as staff in its entire 3-year history on the fingers of one hand. Do you believe, can HRC credibly advocate for trans inclusion and trans employment when it's still doing, frankly, such a poor job of modeling those ideas as an organization itself?
Well, you know, it is something that we are working on to have more representation. I think, you know, it is entirely fair to say that we need more trans staff members. And, you know, we're working on that. Our human resources department, for example, has started going to a lot more trans-specific events to do recruitment and try and get more people who are trans-identified to apply and to be a part of our work. And I think that when you look at the broad array of HRC's volunteer structure, we are doing a much better job of having trans folks in the pipeline who are, you know, volunteering on our steering committees, which leads to greater leadership roles. We have, you know, a board of governors that there are several trans members of, and then that is the usual pool from which people become a member of the board of directors. So I think, you know, getting people involved and being a part of these communities and having experience with the organization, one, is just enriching overall, but two, gives people a way to be a part of those leadership mechanisms like the board of directors.
But the board of directors, let's be honest, and my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding is in order to be on HRC's executive board, you need to raise or donate $50,000 a year. Now, that's more than most trans folks make as an annual salary. So isn't there kind of really a glass ceiling here? Because most trans folks are never going to have that kind of money to be able to donate.
I think, you know, representation is important on all levels, be it LGBT or, you know, economic circumstances or race and religion and party affiliation. You know, I think that we need to do as much as we can to get all sorts of people who are playing a role in helping lead the organization. And I want to go back to your earlier point about, you know, the job that we are. Are we able, you sort of posed it, you know, are we able to do this job? And, you know, as you and I talked before this interview, I wanted to make sure that we would have a chance to have a substantive discussion about the things that HRC does to advance trans equality. And I think that there are a lot of them, and unfortunately, some are not as well known as others. And I do want to sort of address those because I think
sure.
that answers the question of, you know, what is HRC doing for the trans community? I think if you look just simply at our workplace program, we have been able to create safe employment environments for trans people, to have major corporations who are leading the way on transgender inclusive healthcare, ensuring that people get the medically necessary care that they need, working with insurance companies to make sure that they're offering the right plans that are not going to discriminate against transgender people. So, you know, that is just one program of HRC's as an example that I think, you know, if you want to judge the organization, I hope that it's on the basis of what we do and what we're able to accomplish.
Okay, fair enough. But that leads me to my next section, which was another thing that a lot of people commented about, and frankly is quite visible, both through you know, information that comes through HRC and what we read in on the line and on newspapers and on the news every day, which is money. And the amount of money spent on marriage versus the amount of money spent on other issues, issues like workplace rights and housing and access to public spaces and all those things. Can you give us a ballpark percentage or estimate? How much of HRC's annual budget is spent on advocating for issues that are not marriage?
You know, it's a good question and one I wish I was more prepared for because I it's just not a number that I have offhand. I'd be happy to try and figure that out and get back to you, but I honestly don't know. But
okay.
But I see your larger point. And, you know, you and I were on the HuffPo Live hangout a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about employment discrimination issues, and I thought it was a good discussion. But, you know, this issue was raised again is you know, the amount of attention in the media, in the world that is paid to marriage is much larger. And, you know, that is disconcerting. I think that, you know, there are real ways that we can be protecting more people, you know, making sure that they're not able to be fired simply because of who they are. That doesn't get a lot of attention. And what I expressed at the time, I'll say again, is, you know, my job as a communicator, as someone who talks about these issues that face all of our communities, it is a difficult sell oftentimes to get the media to pay attention to these kinds of things. And it's something, you know, we work hard on, and I appreciate the opportunity like we had a couple of weeks ago to talk about it, but there is an uphill battle to get attention, mainstream attention to these issues.
I can totally understand that. But I think, you know, what people see is, for example, they saw, I remember a recent press release from HRC that was boasting that you spent $2.8 million on the Maryland marriage fight. And what I saw was trans folks saying, yeah, and how much did they spend on the trans rights bill that failed? Maybe if we had a little bit of that $2.8 million, well, maybe, you know, because let's be honest, we both know this, Michael, we're political people. We know that money gets attention from politicians, and the people are perceiving, at least in my opinion, people are perceiving that because there's so much money flowing in on behalf of marriage, that these other issues are kind of getting backburnered, and it doesn't seem to be changing. We hear a lot of trans-positive rhetoric. But when we see where the money is going, we see that most of it seems to be flowing directly into the marriage fight. Do you think that's fair?
Well, I think, you know, it is without question that there are a lot of resources in the community directed at marriage, and it's an important issue. And I don't think, though, that necessarily follows that money isn't being spent on other things that and isn't important. I mean, if you look at the lobbying that we do on the Hill, that, you know, it employs a staff of lobbyists and outside lobbying consultants, you know, they're up there on the Hill pressing for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. They are, you know, pressuring the administration to sign an executive order that would ban discrimination among federal contractors based on sexual orientation or gender identity. When you look at all of the foundation programs that we put a lot of resources into at HRC, you know, the Healthcare Equality Index is improving healthcare situations for LGBT people, making sure that culturally competent care is available. We put on trainings for hospital representatives so that they understand what it means to treat someone who is LGBT or T. In our adoption and family programs, making sure that barriers to adoption by LGBT people are gone. You know, I think that there is a slew of other things that we work on every day, and I love to talk about because I think that they're really making a difference in the lives of people, but don't get the headlines. And that doesn't mean that they're not also well-resourced and you know, money is being put behind them. The fact is that is happening, but it's just not heard about as much.
Right. But I would suggest to you that that's probably as much a function of the fact that the marriage stuff is so loud and so big and so media friendly, and this other stuff doesn't get the attention as a function of the fact that people are being, frankly, distracted by all the attention being paid to marriage. So maybe that's one is a function of the other. I wanted to, before, I know we're running short on time, and you know, I wanted to hit you with this one other thing that I think is really key, and a lot of people brought this up when I was talking to them, both in print and to me personally. And I think this is one of the key issues that really says something about HRC's relationship with the trans community. It's honesty and transparency. It seems like in the past, and even at first in this incident that with the Supreme Court rally, whenever HRC is called out for misbehavior, in this situation, the first thing that happens is HRC denies everything, doesn't accept any responsibility, and then goes silent. And that's pretty much exactly what happened for the first couple of days until we saw Fred Sains' apology. And some people have noted to me personally, some activists have said that it's a big deal even that HRC is apologizing at all, because this almost never happens. And what I'm wondering is, are we going to see a change here? I mean, is HRC going to be more transparent, more willing to work with the rest of the community in the future? Are we going to see? Are we going to see that?
First, I want to go to the facts that you laid out, because I don't think it is right to characterize us as denying the whole thing happened. The statement we put out on Thursday did say that people were asked to move, and it tried to give a rationale for why that was the case. And then in coalition, as it was a coalition event, HRC apologized on Friday in that statement. And to be crystal clear, we laid that out in the statement on Monday just from HRC, so that everyone, you know, that there's no confusion as to whether or not we had apologized. You know, I think that when we mess up, it is incumbent upon us to apologize. And I think that will be, you know, that is our guiding principle. And in this case, you know, I'm here talking to you. I'm happy to take some time out to do that, because I agree with you. We need to be transparent and be honest and say we're sorry when we've messed up. So, you know, I really do think that is where we're coming from, and we want, you know, for people to understand the facts of the situation, and then also to take responsibility for ourselves when we don't live up to our highest ideals.
Okay, and that's fair enough. But again, another aspect of this is people are wondering, you know, they say, you know, HRC is basically, and this is, I'm basically repeating things that people have said to me. It says HRC thinks that they're running the show, that they're you know, a lone wolf organization. They don't play well with other organizations, and they need to be more of a team player. Do you think that's a fair criticism, and do you think that needs to be addressed?
I think that is, you know, a criticism that I've certainly heard, and every level of the organization understands that there is that perception. I would encourage folks to, you know, talk to our partner organizations and see what they have to say. You know, you live in New Jersey, and I think that if you were to ask the folks at Garden State Equality if we, you know, have been a good partner to them, I think that the answer would be yes. And I think that is also true for a slew of statewide organizations around the country, other national organizations. You know, I get that we are generally the big kid on the block, and, you know, it is as much of a substance as a perception thing to make sure that we are good partners and working well with others. And I think that, you know, it's something that we're doing rather well right now.
Okay, well, I want to thank you. I guess we're pretty much out of time. Michael, I want to thank you for taking the time. I hope you'll come back and talk with us more, because, you know, I would really like to see some more bridges built. Because as I've said on the show many times, the fact that HRC is the biggest kid on the block, they have the most influence, they have the most money, and, you know, it's an organization that should be, and I think could be more of, a powerful ally for trans rights and for the rights of the working class. And I think, I hope that we can get over some of these issues and start really working together in concert and more in line with where the community is today as a united movement. That's what my hope is, anyway. For whatever
we share that hope.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again.
Sure thing. Take care.
Okay. Bye bye. All right. And that was Michael Cole Schwartz, communications director of the Human Rights Campaign. Thought his answers were interesting. And we are going to get another side of the story. What happened at the SCOTUS rally from Brian John Ellicott. He's going to be joining us in about 5 minutes, but first, we have got one of our lovely musical interludes from Mr. Mike, Sparkle, by Jenny Slater's group, The Treacles. We will catch you in 5, gang.
Every boy and girl is shining bright. your shoes just a little tight. And those heels might make you stumble, but we're all gonna sparkle tonight. Every boy and girl in here is special. Every boy and girl is shining bright. Every boy and girl in here has answered the call. We're all gonna sparkle tonight. We're all gonna sparkle tonight. Just like a glittering diamond ring, you know we're gonna sparkle bright. So get down here and help me sing. We're all gonna sparkle tonight. Every boy and girl is shining bright. Every boy and girl in here has answered the call. We're all gonna sparkle tonight. We're all gonna sparkle tonight. We're all gonna sparkle tonight. We're all gonna sparkle tonight.
Let's get out of here. Look, Emerald City is closer and prettier than ever.
You're out of the dark, you're out of the night. Step into the sun, step into the light.
You won.
It's the Rebecca Giroux Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we have Brian John Ellicott, who was the guy who was at the SCOTUS rally at the Supreme Court of the United States last Wednesday holding the transgender flag. Hi, how you doing, Brian?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. The first thing I wanted to ask you is you were at the rally. You were holding the trans flag. Talk a little bit about what happened after you got there. What happened when you got to the podium and what happened? Tell us the story.
First off, I was never really at the podium. I actually took the flag from a person named Sally Joe from Get Equal Ohio because they had said to her that she couldn't hold the flag originally. And then I interjected, and I asked them why. And they told me that marriage was not a trans issue and that we have our own issues to deal with.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. Now, this person that said that to you, that marriage is not a trans issue, was that definitely an HRC staffer who said that?
She was. She identified herself as an HRC staffer.
Okay, so that's and that was reported to be Karen Quimby, who was, and you know that. Okay, so tell me from your perspective, what was going on in your mind at that point when you were told this?
What was going through my mind is the whole reason I was there in the first place, which is I do want to get married someday. I do identify as bisexual, but as a trans man, either way you look at it, my marriage is never going to be a straight one. So that's why I was there. Because when I choose to get married someday, it's going to be considered a same-sex marriage either way the spectrum you look at it, to me. Personally, right. That's how I see it.
Okay. Another thing I want to know is because I know that John Becker, who we had on the show last week, and Jeremy Davis, who's the executive director of the National Stonewall Democrats, two guys who I know happen to know, were there, and I know that they spoke to you while you were there. Talk about the people who were around you who witnessed this. What was the reaction of these folks when they saw this going on?
So nobody knew that I'm also a member of the Stonewall Democrats in New York City. I hold a seat on the board of directors for that organization. So they didn't know I had a very strong activist background, and they started to interject and stand up for me, which I appreciated. But what I found really, really astonishing is that actually that these were non-trans people realizing that something wrong was going on here.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. And what kind of reaction? What did they say and do?
There was a lot of expletives used, a lot of is this, are you seriously saying this to somebody kind of thing? Huh. I thought it was going to get a little more hostile than it was because everybody was honestly offended for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm used to people saying things about, you know, trans people, and I'm used to, like, turning the other cheek and walking away kind of thing. I'm not used to the reaction I got this time.
So what you're saying is basically people who are in the audience, a lot of them lined up behind you and not in favor of this HRC staffer, Karen Quimby.
Correct.
Excellent. Okay.
Mine was the first incident of three that happened with HRC.
Okay, all right. Well, then tell me what happened next.
There was a speech by an undocumented immigrant who the HRC censored their speech and told them instead of using the words undocumented to use the word dreamer instead, which made me kind of think it was like Johnson or something.
Yeah. Okay. And so you saw. I was going to ask you about that. And what was the reaction from those immigration activists?
The immigration activists were aware of what was supposed to be in the speech. The rest of us didn't until after the fact, and they were just as upset as we were about the trans issues. They were about their speeches being censored.
Interesting. Now, it's also been reported that this HRC staffer, Karen Quimby, tried to have a pride flag block the view of your flag from the camera. Is that accurate? Did you witness that, and what happened with that?
So the pride flag that's being discussed is, they tried to use that to block my flag, but also the signs of another man. I don't know his last name. His name was Alan. And he was there raising awareness about bullying and suicide going on in the LGBT community. And he had these really large posters that he was trying to hold up as high as possible, like, to have the media actually see them. And they were trying to block those.
Interesting. Okay. Another thing I wanted to ask you is how has this affected you personally? Has this had an impact on you, and if so, how?
So it's affected me in a couple ways because I was also threatened by a videographer to have her set my flag on fire.
Oh, lovely. Now I should point out, I ask this because it's been mentioned to me by other people, privately. Was the videographer affiliated with HRC in any way?
I'm unsure of that. I really don't know.
Okay. Because I had heard about that from other people, but.
I got a little too upset with that one to actually want to talk to this person and go into it. I actually started crying and handed off my flag to somebody else and walked off crying because I was too offended by that. As a victim of a hate crime in July 13th of last year, I was not okay with that situation at all and actually got upset enough to start crying and walk away.
Wow. Okay. Another thing I want to ask you is, do you have anything personally that you would like to say to Karen Quimby, the HRC staffer, and to HRC, the organization?
I want to know why it took them till April 1st, on April Fool's Day nonetheless, to apologize to us, and why on Friday they were trying to deny that any of this happened and call us all liars. I don't appreciate that. As an aspiring New York City politician to one day be in office, I don't like being called a liar when I know what I witnessed and I know what was said to me. That's the first thing. The second thing is not that they've done this, how are they going to help us fix the issues we already have in the trans community? We don't have gender in New York State. There's issues in Arizona. I want to see them back all of our issues and help us.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Now, we know that as we talked about with Michael a little bit earlier, HRC has publicly apologized for this. You know, whether that's an accepted apology is another story, but they've apologized for this. What, in your opinion, do you think that they should do to make amends and demonstrate that they've learned their lesson here?
I'm So we're supposed to all reconvene in June to the decision of Prop 8 and DOMA. The people involved in this want to be a part of the organizing of those events, regardless of when they are. Because they're trying to tell us that there were supposed to be only American flags. I've asked people organizing this. They can't find anything in their memos that says only American flags.
Yeah.
Okay. We all got the red shirt memo. We didn't get the American flag memo.
Yeah, well, okay. I, you know, Michael did address that. I'll leave it up to folks who are listening to you know, make their own determinations about that. Now, one other thing I wanted to ask you about tonight is because I think this is something of interest, and I know I didn't tell you I was going to ask you about this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. I know that you are working with a trans candidate for New York City Council, Mel Wymore. He's appeared on the Melissa Harris Perry Show a couple of times. And I was wondering if you could talk about what you think in terms of trans folks getting involved in politics, and do you think that this is going to have a positive influence on American politics going forward?
So I also, being a trans man and being, as I like to call it, the political nerd that I am, I think it's very good for our community to be involved in politics. Not just LGBT politics, but all aspects of it. Housing, environment, you know, budgeting, all of it. Because essentially it is everything we do in life. We all have homes. We all spend money. We all want to protect the environment, hopefully. So I think it's a good thing.
Okay.
And so that's me.
Okay, and I know, as I say, you're a New York City guy. I personally was born in New York City. I was born in Brooklyn. I think we all know that there are still a few problems in New York City when it comes to trans folks. We've heard of human rights violations. A couple of years ago, we had a horrific story told by a gentleman, a trans man named Justin Adkins, who described his treatment at the hands of the NYPD when he was arrested during an Occupy Wall Street protest on the Brooklyn Bridge. Was basically chained up in a bathroom and put on display for the entertainment of fellow NYPD officers. We've heard a story just this week of somebody who died from diabetic shock when New York EMS refused to work on this individual when they discovered that she was trans. Do you, and I don't know if you can speak for Mel here, but do you think that having trans people involved in city politics is going to help change that? I mean, and another thing is we also know that New York City has some of the most draconian rules and regulations in order to transfer to change a birth certificate in the entire country. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, are these issues kind of issues going to be addressed if and when we have a trans person on the city council and in a position of power?
I am not allowed to speak for Mel right now.
Okay, I didn't want you to, but I was asking you, as somebody who lives in New York and as somebody who pays attention to the politics there, do you think that these things can be addressed?
So before I answer all your questions, I do want to let you know that I am the son of a deceased fire department EMS EMT lieutenant for the fire department of New York City.
Okay.
My dad got sick from 9/11 and passed away in 2007.
Uh-huh.
And I have been doing a lot of educating of some of my dad's fellow coworkers about what I'm going through because they don't understand it. They're supposed to help people regardless. And I'm a little offended and a little appalled that essentially my own family would not help the people they've sworn to help. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I know how things like that happen. I've had it happen to me with both the NYPD and the EMS on an occasion. So across the board, we do need to have that change.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in city council, but in the state. And that's why we need gender passed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. All right. And is there anything else that we haven't covered that you would like to let our listeners know about what went on with this and what your impressions and your feelings are about this situation?
I think the situation was handled very poorly, but I do want to commend all of those who have been trying to change that and bring awareness to that. We've had a lot of great support from, you know, a lot of trans people, a lot of allies to the trans community, a lot of the LGB community has come out and helped us, and a lot of straight people have come to help us. So we've actually really done some great work, even though the situation was horrible.
Great. I'm so glad to hear that, because that always, you know, I mean, it may not make it go away, but at least it makes it more worthwhile. Brian, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. I hope we'll get a chance to speak again. And I hope you'll keep listening to the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right. And that was Brian John Ellicott, the guy who was holding the transgender flag at the rally. We got a few minutes before we go to our next break, so why don't we throw the phone lines open? You guys can give me a call. Call in. The number is 928-277-4921. Give us a call. What'd you think of what Michael Cole Schwartz had to say? What'd you think of Brian? Give me your thoughts. Are you encouraged by what you heard? Are you discouraged? Do you think you need to hear more? You tell me. 928-277-4921. We got about 10 minutes before our next break, so we got plenty of time for a couple of calls here. Personally, I you know, it's hard for me to judge, because it sounds supportive. It sounds like, you know, HRC is recognized that this is a problem. I didn't hear a lot. I mean, I heard a lot about what's going on in the background as Michael was talking about. I think those things are encouraging. I think those things are great. But I don't really hear how do we make it better is really what I was kind of hoping to hear. And maybe we don't get that in a half hour interview. Maybe we don't. Maybe this requires a little bit more time, a little bit more effort. But that's what I heard. Now, what I would like to see is another story. I would like to see HRC show us that what they're saying here is more than damage control. That they're saying, you know what, we realize that this is a problem. And we don't just recognize it and move on. We're actually going to do something about it. We're going to change the way that we have been doing things. You know, there's going to be a real change here. And that's kind of what I was hoping for. And again, like I said, half hour interview. There's just so much you can get to. We had a lot to talk about. Michael's answers were, you know, we were moving quickly, so we couldn't sit there and expand for a half hour on what these things all mean. But there's clearly some issues here, and I do hope, and I will keep up with this. I do hope that Michael Cole Schwartz does come up with a number and tell us how much is HRC really spending on issues that are unrelated to marriage. What kind of a percentage of their annual budget really goes towards things that are not marriage? Because I just, you know, I'm no great transgender sage. I'm a trans woman with a microphone. That's what I am. Okay? And I can tell you that as a media consumer, as somebody who pays attention to these issues, what I see is I see HRC making full-color videos for marriage, I see them throwing $3 million a pop on these state marriage efforts. I see Melissa Harris Perry and the sports stars and the this one and the that one. And it's money, 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 money. And I don't see that. I don't see it on gender in New York. I don't see it in the marriage, excuse me, in the trans rights bill in Maryland. I don't see it. And you know what? Michael Cole Schwartz may well be right that there's a lot going on in the background that we don't see. And that's fair. Okay. That's fair. But, well, you make sure that we see it. You make sure that we see it when it involves marriage. So maybe you should make more of an effort to make sure that we see it on these issues as well. I think that's not an unreasonable request to say, you know what, if you can do full color videos and spend hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars on marriage, then when you make a big effort on employment rights, when you make a big effort on, I don't know, immigration or any of these other issues, working class issues, why don't we get this kind of attention? And, you know, that's really where I'm having the issue. And again, I think this is an unfinished, I think this is an unfinished conversation. I liked what Michael Cole Schwartz had to say, but unfortunately, because of the time involved and because we had to cover so many different things, I don't think we dug deeply enough. And I think we need to dig deeper than we dug tonight with him and with, most importantly, with the people who are, you know, I mean, Michael Cole Schwartz is the media guy. He's the communications director. He's the guy who deals with the media, like me. And that's good. But, you know, in order to get real change, Michael is the spokesperson. We also need to talk to the policymakers. We need to talk to the people who are making the decisions. You know, I would love, personally, and this is, of course, you know, radio host me, you know, trying to get the big names, and I'll freely admit that. But I would love to have a conversation with Chad. You know, I would like to have him on the show. I would like to have maybe some of the executive board members on the show. I would like to say, okay, you know, you say you're supporting trans rights, and that's all well and good. Let's talk about it. Where are you fighting? How are you fighting for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? Why didn't we see you guys out full force in 2009, in 2010, when there was a real chance that this could become law? Where were you guys? That's what I want to know. And how come we haven't seen? Now, we all know. Let's be honest. We all know. ENDA is not getting through the House with John Boehner in charge. It's not. We know this. HRC has issued press statements. HRC has issued press statements on all kinds of things, and but what we don't see is I'm trying to think of a good way to put this. We hear a lot of talk, but we don't see a lot of action. You know, why did it take 4 years for HRC to come up with a statement on the executive order? Why did it take 4 years? This is something he promised us back in the first election. Why wasn't HRC out there publicly, like they are with marriage? Why wasn't HRC out there publicly on ENDA in 2009 and 2010? And I think that is what people see, and that is why people don't trust these people. Because we keep seeing stuff like that. We keep seeing the big bandwagon with money shooting out the back end is all about marriage. But we don't see any of that money. And it may well be there, but we don't see it. We don't see it. And in order to have a real media impact, and Michael Cole Schwartz knows this as well as I do, and probably you do too, in order to have an impact on the average American, you got to be in the media. You got to talk about it. You got to have it out there. So that's what we haven't seen. That's what we haven't seen. And that's why I believe that people are having trust issues here, because they don't see it. They just don't see it. And so, you know, and especially when you hear something like Brian Ellicott, you know, this is just a guy who was there to promote his community, to wave the flag, and it was badly handled. And I think Michael acknowledged that. It was badly handled. It was wrong. And but the problem is clearly, there needs to be some education done at HRC itself. I mean, that to me, it seems the most obvious thing here, that there are people at HRC like Karen Quimby who don't consider trans rights worth fighting for, don't consider it part of HRC's mission, consider us annoyances to be swept around, to be cut out of the shot, to be eliminated so that their message can be promoted. There obviously are people like that at HRC, and they are in positions of power and control. And that, more than anything else, more than any single issue, is the biggest part of the problem. I mean, far be it from me to quote Gandhi, but, you know, be the change you want to see. All right, it is time for our 8 o'clock break. We are going to go, let's see, what lovely artists do we have coming up? We have got Sydney Bullens, Love Letter from Vegas. We'll be back with Mike Rogers right after this.
Blanche, will you marry me?
I need to go talk to them.
Fine, but I'll need an answer. I'm not going to wait for you forever.
You won.
Spring is here, a suffering is here. Life is Skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me, and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweet.
All right, hi everybody. We are back. It's the Rebecca Giro Show. And thanks for sticking around. And we have got Raw Story Managing Director Mike Rogers on the line. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, how are you? Good to be on the show.
Good. I'm so glad to have you on because
Can I just say something? I just want to say that music was Tom Lehrer, one of the great satirists of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And, of course, we attribute that to our producer, Mr. Mike, who comes up with all these wonderful things to make the show sound great and make me sound like I actually know what I'm talking about. But anyway, I wanted to talk to you tonight because I know, you know, you've been an activist in the community a lot of years. You live in D.C. You know these folks. I wanted to ask you, I know you've been following what happened with the rally at the Supreme Court. I know you weren't physically there, but as somebody who's familiar with the politics and with the people and everything, what's your take? What do you think really happened at this thing?
Well, you know, first of all, I didn't see it firsthand. I think it's important to say that. But there's a couple of things, and my first observation, I think, that, you know, I like to share with people is that there are certainly differences and, you know, ways to approach different things in the movement, but the fact is that each and every one of us is doing more than most people will do in a lifetime. We're doing in a couple of days. So we need to figure out, like, what are these issues that happen, and I think in the case of the rally, I think that, you know, first of all, the story has really escalated. At first, I had heard from somebody who was there that there was a little controversy because somebody was asked to take down the trans flag, and when I had talked to people, it almost seemed like it was more of a HRC wants our flag flying and no other flag should be flying. I'll tell you, I've been involved in the community since 1986. I did not know there was a trans flag. So I don't know if it was a specific attack on the transgender community. The way it went down still might have been wrong. I get that. But I think it's hard to tell. And I mean, and then, you know, the story then, I mean, Becky, do you think that somebody on the staff of the Human Rights Campaign threatened to burn somebody's flag? I mean,
well hang on a second, because that's not exactly what Brian told us.
What Brian said was, I don't know, it wasn't them. You know, it was one of those, like, you know, to just stop abusing your wife things. I just wanted to say that. I think it
right,
was a
but
little...
we also don't know. We also don't know that it was. So I'm not going to come out and blame HRC for something that we don't know. Okay, the truth is we don't know if they were affiliated with HRC or not. It's important to make that point because there's stuff we do know that it was HRC was directly involved in, and it's fair to call them on that. It's fair to talk to them about that. It's fair to assign blame, but it's not
and
fair
absolutely,
to assign.
Absolutely, I agree.
Okay, but now, first of all, I personally think that anybody who's in a position of authority at HRC should certainly know what the transgender pride flag looks like. I mean, I don't think that's too great of a reach. Do you?
I mean, I don't want to make this about the transgender community, but I have been involved in this community, literally, for over 20 years, over 25 years, and I did not know about the trans flag until this happened. So, let me say this. Is there an opportunity here for the transgender community to say, hey, why don't we use this little kerfuffle as an opportunity to have some training where everyone at HRC would be required to go through this one-hour workshop that we'll set up and do in groups of 10 or 20 to educate them on this is the trans flag, please include it, etc. I will tell you that when I was at the task force, HRC refused to include bi and trans on the invitation to the second inaugural gala, and NGLTF and the Victory Fund insisted that it be there.
Now,
so
the
I do think
gala,
that
we're talking Bill Clinton, right?
We're talking when Bill Clinton was running, they vehemently, I mean, to the point where senior members of their leadership hung up the phone on me over it. And, you know, now some of those people are the big leaders. So, I, you know, some people say I'm an apologist, but I try to work, you know, I've also been an activist screaming at these groups. But I do think it's important if we attack them that we also recognize where they have done better, and they are trying, you know, to recognize the good side, it makes it easier to criticize what we see as bad.
Absolutely. That you were in full agreement on. Now, let me ask you one more question on this before we move on to something
sure.
else. Do you think that how do you think as a result of this whole kerfuffle and all this, do you think they should change the way they've been dealing with transgender inclusion and support going forward? And how do you think they should approach that?
You know, for me, as, you know, a gay white man to say, here's what HRC has to do to have the trans community included, is it would be kind of arrogant. But what I can say is, as long as there's disconnect, that means there's room for dialogue. So what I would say is that this is an opportunity for that. You know what I'm saying? From where it,
yeah, absolutely.
Listen, and like I say, I was arrested in a cathedral. I understand pressing tactics hard. I get it. I've protested LGBT organizations, but this is one of those teaching moments where I think that A, somebody did something that sounds pretty stupid, but I can't imagine that it was an organizational endorsed way that somebody came forward. Was there clumsiness on their part? Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, that's what happens at big organizations because, you know, that always happens in terms of how they respond. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that it almost seems like we're looking at as we look at anti-LGBT politicians like, I am waiting to pounce on this organization or that one. I am going to just wait in like Media Matters on Fox News, and you'll find it. $41 million is a lot of jack. You'll
yeah.
find something you don't like.
Well, so, I mean, come on. I mean, for those who don't know, for listeners who maybe haven't been around the community for that long, they should also point out that you were the blog master of a blog called Blog Active, and you used to out these hypocritical politicians who used to be against trans rights and against gay rights, and yet at the same time were participating in either were gay themselves or had gay experiences, and you would out them. So, you know.
Right, and at that time had huge in the media, on TV, public fights with the Human Rights Campaign over it.
Oh, sure.
Press
yeah.
releases issued and battles of history and all this stuff. So I'm all about holding these groups to account when it's time to. You know, I just think that we should be strategic as to when those times come and how they come.
Absolutely. Okay, I want to move on to something else. Now, at the one of the reasons why that rally was being held, of course, was because the Supreme Court last week, Tuesday and Wednesday, heard cases challenging the constitutionality of Proposition 8 in California and the Defense of Marriage Act. I'm curious what you expect to happen here. Do you expect to see DOMA struck down or Prop 8?
I think that, you know, I think, first of all, to kind of, you know, sit as pundits and look at this and talk about it and as people who comment on the news, this is probably one of the more interesting cases because what I try to do is imagine myself, you know, what is going on in that room when they sit there? And here's what I think will override the entire conversation. There's a guy by the name of Roger Taney. T-A-N-E-Y, Taney.
Uh-huh.
You can just put in T-A-N-E-Y in Google, and he comes up in Wiki. And he served our country as the Attorney General, the Secretary of War, the Secretary of the Treasury, and Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court for 28 years. That's a hell of a career, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
on paper, pretty much qualified to be president. And when you read his Wikipedia entry, the very first paragraph in the four-sentence intro, what is he best known as? The guy who wrote Dred Scott. The guy who wrote the decision saying African-American slaves were not entitled to equality. John Roberts does not want his first paragraph to have that in it.
I think that
overrides the discussion.
That's an interesting perspective.
I'm sorry?
I said that's an interesting perspective because I've heard this approach from a lot of different angles. The legacy angle is not one that I had heard before.
Right. I mean, this is a man who has it. At the very least, a lot of gay friends. If you type John Roberts Pie, P-I-E, into Google Images, folks, you'll see a picture of him like with his two friends and a pie at like some kind of dinner thing. I mean, these two guys, I'm not going to out anybody, but you guys go look at the picture.
So, you tell me
what's going on, you know?
Absolutely.
I think that that's part of this. Now, do I think that he'll make a sweeping ruling demanding that marriage is constitutional across the country? He may not be ready to get there yet. He may not be ready to use this as the case, but I just, and Doma's dead. I mean, I think that the justices agree, you know, I just can't, if, you know, even if Scalia and Thomas believe their own hype about states' rights, they would declare Doma dead in a minute. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, and Roberts has cobbled together some new majorities, so we'll have to see.
Absolutely. What about Prop 8? There's a lot of people who are saying they could use that to invalidate all bans on gay marriage. Others say the Supreme Court is going to move very conservatively, and whatever they do on that will only apply to California. You have any thoughts on that?
Prop 8 is certainly, to me, as an observer, and I'm no legal expert, is certainly much more complicated of an issue. I have an issue with the standing question. I believe, and I know a lot of my colleagues disagree with me, maybe I'm putting myself out there, but I believe if the people of a state pass an initiative, that someone should have the standing to sue in a court to uphold it. I believe that. Now, you know, because what we do is we end up giving one politician veto power over all of our initiatives. I don't agree with the initiative process, but as long as we have it, it should be fairly used. So I do think that on the issue of standing, the case will go forward, and I think that they don't want to put this case off. And when the case moves forward, I think that they will uphold the trial court, not because they believe Prop 8 has to go or stay, but because what their job is to review the constitutionality and the decision that came to the judge who the court has come from. So in effect, they would have to overturn a ruling. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know if that will happen with Kennedy. It will be very interesting.
Yeah, it will. It will. Another thing I wanted to ask you about is something we touched about on earlier in the show with Michael Cole Schwartz, which is money in the LGBT civil rights movement. Now, as I said before, you've lived in D.C. a long time. You've been a major activist. In your opinion, do you think that the vast majority of money that's being focused on marriage, but not on issues like workplace rights, housing protections, access to public spaces, is all that attention on marriage hurting the movement, do you think?
No, I don't think it is. What I think is happening is, what I tell people is this when I talk to folks, communities don't pick issues, but issues pick communities. There wasn't some big meeting of HRC and this group and that group and this group where somebody said, okay, so everybody down with the program, we're all marriage all the time. That's not how it happens. What happens is there's an interest in an issue that either through Congress it rises up or through the court system something comes to you, that's what happened here, or a proposition is passed that people get angry about. So it's not like any kind of in the beltway or inside organizations get to sit and pick what's going to happen. If that was the case, ENDA, we would have worked on ENDA for much longer and much harder than, you know, people wanted to hold off on marriage. So it's not really up to the various, it's not up to the people, the powers that be, to decide what issues will come before them. And that's just the way it is. You know, the court gets to decide what cases, but someone has to bring the case to them before they can rule on it. So,
but isn't that a function of the amount of money that people are injecting into the marriage movement versus what they're injecting into these other issues? Is that that's where the money is, so that's where the focus is? I mean, is one the function of the other?
I think that the money comes in because that's where the focus is. I don't think that the money drives the focus. Listen, right. Here's the bottom line, Becky. Are you ready?
Okay.
Marriage is an issue that moves gay, white men.
Yeah.
It just so happens that those gay, white men are the people with the money. Yes, there's wealthy trans people in, but we know the deal, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you get to the big bucks.
There's a few out there, but not a lot.
Don't add extra fingers. You'll be fine with the 10 you have to count.
Right, exactly.
So let me tell you what's next. Do you want to know what's next?
Sure, absolutely.
And then let me tell you what I think has to happen so it doesn't become this is a trans issue, or what about trans rights? Because to me, it's far more important for the next issue is elder care and elder seniors, right? And guess why? Huh? All these aging gay white men with money, right? Decision makers who have a need, all of a sudden senior queer housing is being built, the SAGE organizations are being funded, tons of money is being dumped into the government for health and human service changes, for to make sure that nursing homes are open policy and all of these things, because that's the issue that these people are facing. That's what they're going to write checks for. So what I think is important for us as a community is to work, and yes, obviously stand up for these rights and those rights and those rights, but it's far more important to me to make sure that someone is at the table making sure that that LGBT housing for seniors includes, like it includes a women set aside to make sure it's diverse, that it includes people of color set aside to make sure it's diverse. We need to make sure at those levels that the trans community is being included. A flag is a symbol. It's important. But let's get down to the nitty-gritty, and let's not leave people feeling that all they have to do is don't forget us. You know, let's make it all work and include. You know, make sense?
Sure. So. I mean, it sounds great, but I think what we've seen is that the money, is followed by the politicians and the organization. You know, it seems like this cycle. You know, that's where the money is, so that's where the politicians focus their attention, so that's where the activists who are focused on the politicians are focusing, and then therefore, you know, it's like it just goes round and round and round, is what it seems like from somebody who's an outside observer, like myself. It seems like the people with the money get the attention, and the people who are getting the attention are the ones with the money, so...
Well, I don't know... If you've looked at Congress recently, but their demographic doesn't exactly match that of the American people.
But for example, a great example is the DNC convention last year when we saw speaker after speaker after speaker say how much they supported gay marriage. Not a single one of those speakers mentioned workplace rights or the issues of the working class or any of that stuff.
Right, because it's not, as I said earlier, it's not the issue. This is what I told someone the other day. Do you remember AIDS? Right? Do you remember AIDS? Because it used to be a big issue. It used to be front and center. But then, the powers that be, I'm just showing you how the agenda's picked.
Yeah.
The powers that be, they got their drugs. There's protease inhibitors. They treat it like diabetes because they have access to health care, because they have access to insurance. They have access to hospitals, access to doctors, access to medicines. So it's all about finding. So what I think is important, which I think we've done a great job at, I think that when you look at the trans community particularly and government and healthcare reporting and all of those big successes, because instead of just saying it's a trans issue or it's a this issue or a that issue, it's about taking that group of people, taking that segment, and making sure that they're part of bigger things. So it doesn't become tokenism. It becomes, yes, we're involving people from the beginning in this housing to make sure that there's gender-neutral bathrooms in LGBT senior housing. If you don't have the right people at the table, how are you going to know that?
Right. Okay.
Right?
Well, so. I see what you're saying, and that makes a lot of sense. What do you think? How do you think that organizations like the Human Rights Campaign, maybe some of these other organizations that are money flush and focused on marriage, what changes would you like to see, from the way things are going now, if you were, king of the activist movement for a day?
Well, if I was a benevolent dictator and I got to decide everything, no. I think what I would do if I had the resources, and I've said this, I would love to find the money, and I know this is going to sound like a layer of bureaucracy, but give me a moment to explain it. I would love to start an organization of LGBT organizations. So, and what that organization would do is things like conferences for all the fundraisers and conferences for all the communications people and conferences on trans issues or outreach, and where these organizations who are members, and then there's best practices, connecting finance people up with skill sets and training. So if I had resources, I would try to focus it on that kind of community building. But I also recognize that in the political sphere, in order to have continued victories, I mean, and that's what this is about, people want to keep winning. In order to keep winning, you will need to keep that money churning. That's how this town works, I'm telling you.
I totally agree with you. Well, we're just about out of time, but before I let you go, let me hit you with, as I said at the top of the show, as I hope folks know, you are the managing director of Raw Story, which is one of the more popular news sites for and not just LGBT, but a whole wide range of issues. What's hot on the Raw Story site this week?
Well, Now, I know this might come as a surprise to you, but we had a story up, and I know it's still floating around on the site in the links, about a Republican politician who was arrested for child pornography.
I'm shocked, I tell you, just shocked.
Right, and then, and then there's this big thing, I don't know if you've heard, it's been out there, there's the story about the political emails that were leaked that ended up showing all this offshore money. Then there's a story, this is unbelievable, where students couldn't pay for the lunches in front of them and they were hungry, so...
Ooh, yeah, I read that one today. That
throw them away. And then we have a video channel up top, which is like four videos that are hot. Of course, Rachel's up there and some, crazy right-wing video folks. We always like to highlight those. So it's a pretty packed... And, of course... plenty of stuff on Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's always entertaining. Mike, I want to thank you so much for coming on. You're awesome, as always. I hope you'll come on again soon, because it's always fun when we have you on.
Thank you. Have a great one.
You too. All right. Bye. We'll talk to you later. All right. Hey, that was Mike Rogers, managing director of Raw Story, and a good guy. And we are going to go to a break. We have got, what have we got? I believe we have the lovely and talented Miss Jane County. And we got another new single from her. We love Jane. She's just one of our favorites. Ready to Stop. We'll see you in five, gang.
Ha ha, your mushrooms are gone.
You won!
Well, leave it to me to play a 40-year-old Anne Murray song about solidarity or a park or something like that. But it's a nice song.
Yes, it is. All right. Thanks, everybody, for sticking around. It's the Rebecca Juro Show. We still got some time. What did you think about what you heard tonight? I had some comments. I got some more. I think Mike Rogers had a lot of smart stuff to say, you know, about the way things work in Washington. I mean, don't forget, this is a guy who's been around a long time. He's been working as an activist for a long time. And I think his perspective is a good one. Again, I think that the Human Rights Campaign, I think there needs to be some soul searching on those upper floors. You know what I mean? I really do. I think that these people, and really, I honestly believe this. And those of you who read my article that I recently posted, it was kind of, you know, it's kind of funny because I wrote this article about the Human Rights Campaign and a little bit about the history and stuff. And I posted it to now when you post a blog, when you publish a blog, you go into the back end of the site and you put it out there, and the editors take a look at it, and they do with whatever they were going to do, and then they post it. So I don't actually publish the thing. Okay, I submit it, they look at it, they tweak it the way they want to tweak it, and then they publish it. So I published this article. The original title was, "Even After All These Years, HRC Still Doesn't Get It." That was the original title. Now, when it appeared on the Bellerico Project, on the other hand, the title of the article, they changed the title of the article. The title on Bellerico was "HRC Still Doesn't Get It, But They Could," and they added some subtitles and a few other things and a little bit of editing here and there. On the other hand, the Huffington Post kept the original title, did some different editing. Didn't add any subtitles. So when I was promoting this thing earlier this week, I called one was the original because it popped up on Bellerico first, and then the second time when it popped up on the Huffington Post a couple days later, I called it the HuffPo Remix. Because it was a little bit, the article was basically the same article, but there was a little bit of formatting. It was interesting, the difference in formatting between the two sites. But my point in that article mainly was to hammer one of the issues that we spoke about with Michael Cole Schwartz tonight, which was the issue of transparency, the issue of honesty, the issue that you know, HRC has been caught doing stuff too many times. And that is a big part of why I believe that people are reluctant to trust them. I mean, I think Joe Salmanis, personally, and you know, Elizabeth Birch didn't help either. Back when, those of you who have been around long enough can remember, when she said that transgender people would be included in ENDA over her dead body. That was back in the 90s yet. Okay, and you heard some of the stuff that Mike Rogers was telling us just before, where they didn't want us to be a part of an invitation. You know, this stuff has been going on a long time. And so I think personally the most damage that was done to the reputation of this organization in terms of trans inclusion, in terms of the issues of the working class, in terms of just people, you know, issues that are important to people who are not obscenely wealthy, was done by Joe Salmanis when he either proved that he is a great liar or a huge idiot. One of the two. We still don't know which. We really don't. Because here's a guy. You go and you step up in front of 900 transgender people and you tell them something that proves within less than 2 weeks proves not to be true. Okay, now, here's my theory on it. And this has been, I can't name names here, but let's just say it has been given a lot of credibility by certain individuals who would probably be in the know. That what happened was Joe Salmanis was honest about what he said when he went in front of 900 trans people and he said, we're not going to support non-inclusive legislation anymore, and we've sent that message. And then what people are saying, or some people are saying anyway, not everyone, but certain people, has said, oh, well, you know what happened. He was overruled by the executive board because they don't give a shit about us. All they care about is marriage, and all they care about is gays and lesbians. They couldn't care whether transgender people live or die. I mean, that's, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, obviously, but that seems to be the attitude of that they just said, fuck those trans people, dump them, and let's get rights for ourselves. Because that's what we care about, and we've got the money, we've got the checkbooks, do what we tell you, Joe, and if anybody complains, it's your fault. You're the employee, you're going to take the heat on this, okay? Just like the NRA takes the heat for the gun manufacturers, Joe Salmanis took the heat for the HRC executive board. That's what people have been saying to me for a long time now. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. But either Salmanis knew that that was likely to happen and he went out and made that statement anyway because it sounded good, or he was too stupid to figure it out. And you know what? I have a lot of problems with Joe Salmanis and his advocacy. I don't believe he's a stupid man. I really don't. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. He felt it was politically opportunistic. He felt it was to his advantage and to his organization's advantage to say what people wanted to hear. And then he would deal with the fallout later. Because that's his job. His job is to be the heat shield for the HRC executive board, the people who are actually making the decisions. I say this all the time on the show, but I think people need to be reminded. Chad Griffin, Joe Salmanis, Elizabeth Birch, these people, they were president of the Human Rights Campaign, but they're not president of the Human Rights Campaign in the same way as Barack Obama is president of the United States. These people are employees of the HRC executive board. And if they don't like the way that he's doing his job, they can fire him and replace him with somebody who they like. He is an employee. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And that's why I say that if we're going to have a serious conversation about these issues, if we're going to have a serious conversation about the way HRC does business, about the way they treat the trans community, about the way they deal with issues other than marriage, well, you know what? Chad Griffin would be great to have. but he's only part of the picture. He, like Michael Cole Schwartz, is a spokesperson. He is a figurehead. The people who are really making the decisions are these guys and these women who are donating 50 grand a year just to have a vote. And we have what? We have one trans woman on the board, one part-timer who gets one vote. There are 50. What I'm understanding is there are like 50 members of the HRC executive board. So one trans person versus 50? I mean, how is that representation? I mean, even Michael Cole Schwartz admitted that they need to do better on that, and I hope they will. I hope that it's not just about, just like it's not just about, Chad Griffin didn't work himself through the organization. Karen Quimby, I have her biography right here. She was hired as a regional field director. That's management. She was hired into that position. She didn't work her way up. She was a district representative for a congresswoman. She didn't work her way up through HRC. She was hired to be a manager. And that tells you something. What most scary to me, what's most, I don't know, scary, most concerning to me about that is that this woman, A, did not know what the transgender flag was. That indicates a certain level of tunnel vision. Okay, and then now we've had it confirmed by Brian that she said that marriage is not a transgender issue. That scares the shit out of me, because that level of ignorance on a management level is deeply, deeply concerning. That's what concerns me more than anything else. That people like this who are so woefully ignorant of the rest of the community and our issues could be put into a management position. Because it doesn't appear that anybody really cared what she thought of transgender issues, what she thought of inclusiveness, what she thought of workplace issues, what she thought of anything except marriage, 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 marriage. She managed a no on Proposition 8 field office in California. What does that tell you? Marriage, 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 marriage. That's the problem. How is that diversity? You're hiring the same straight-looking white people on the same issue, talking about the same rhetoric, and want to be looking at the same people and the same flags and the same as you and same as all your people, same as your executive board, same just as white, just as wealthy, just as marriage-focused. I mean, I don't know about you, but personally, I think diversity means more than that. And so, given that, I have to ask myself, is it any real surprise that this woman, Karen Quimby, didn't know what a transgender pride flag was? Yeah, okay, Mike Rogers didn't know. But Mike Rogers doesn't work for the HRC, an organization that supposedly is LGBT inclusive. You're telling me that this person is a field organizer and doesn't know all the flags of the community? Are you shitting me? Because no, because all she seems to have ever done here, the only issue-based position that I can see in this bio here, is marriage-related. It seems like they stopped reading at that point. Oh, she's a marriage person. Let's hire her, just as in the case of Chad Griffin. Oh, he was a big deal on the marriage front. Let's hire him. That says something. How many workplace, how many former union organizers are on the staff there? How many people who focus on workplace issues are on their staff? How many people who have actually worked with the transgender community and on our issues are working for this organization? Well, we know how many transgender people are working for this organization, but every time you see something like this, you see what the result is. The ignorance is stunning. And you know what? When you put ignorant people into powerful positions, this is what happens. So my hope is that they're going to get some diversity. That you have to actually hire people. You have to give them jobs. You have to show that, you know what, we're willing to put our money where our mouth is. That our hiring isn't only limited to this one issue. But so far, I can't see any evidence that that's the case. It's all marriage all the time. Allison Robinson left to go to SLDN, OutSurf. Have they replaced her with a trans person? No. I mean, you can count the number of trans employees this organization has had on the fingers of one hand. And then they come and they try to argue, oh, yes, we support transgender rights and transgender workplace rights. You can't even put somebody in one of your stores. And you're telling me, how does that count as transgender representation? It makes no sense. And people are picking up on this. People are picking up on this. And you know what? I hope, my hope, because you know what? This is not about bashing HRC. It's not. I mean, sure, plenty of people have plenty of problems. I've certainly not hesitated to tell you mine. But it's not about bashing HRC. It's about saying, we deserve better. And if you want to speak for us, you have to reflect us and you have to put our issues on the table too. You can't just give all your money in one direction and spend a little bit here and there, throw out a few press releases, and then claim you're fighting for transgender people. You have to put your money where your mouth is. It's not enough, just like it's not enough when Democrats in Congress say they're fighting for our civil rights but don't do a goddamn thing. If it's not credible when a politician says it, it's certainly not credible when the Human Rights Campaign says it. And that's the issue. You know what? I asked Mike Rogers earlier, I said, if you were king of the activist community, what would you do? I'm going to tell you what I would do. If I were queen of the activist community for a day, or maybe even just the head of the Human Rights Campaign, let's go there. As long as we're fantasizing, let's go all the way. If I were in charge of the Human Rights Campaign for a day, you know what the first thing I would do? I would hire some trans people, okay? But not just any trans people. You know who I would reach out to? I realize these people have other jobs. We're in fantasy land here, so we might as well just, I'm fantasizing. But I will give you some archetypes of people who I would look for. I would start picking out people like Diego Sanchez. I would start picking out people like Allison Robinson, like Mara Kiesling, if she was available, like Vincent Villano over at NCTE, like Babs Kasbar, like, you know, people who are trans and who are politically savvy and who know how to get things done, who have worked in leadership capacities before, who are serious political players, who know how to do these things, who know how to carry the message, who know how to organize. I would start looking for those kinds of people. And you know that they're out there. I mean, granted, Mara has a pretty good job. Well, you know, Diego and Allison, they're all working at their own. But they're, I mean, it's not like we're hard to find, you know? The 90s are over. You can find us. We're on television now. Hello. I mean, seriously, we're not hard to find. Get some people who are going to say to you, HRC, you know what? Don't do that. You're going to piss people off. Don't do that. You see what you're doing over there? Do you realize that that's going to be offensive to transgender people? Try it a different way. That's what HRC needs. HRC needs people who can step out of that white bubble that they're in, that white male professional bubble that they're stuck in, and say, no, 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 no. What you're thinking here may make sense to you, Mr. super wealthy white executive board member with your tuxedoed husband holding a champagne glass, but you know what? You see that trans man working at the gas station over there? The guy who has to walk three blocks to use the bathroom because he lives in Arizona? You see that guy over there? He's not going to buy that shit. That's what HRC needs. They need people who are working class, who live in the real world, who don't have, who live off their paychecks, not their investment portfolios. That's what HRC needs. HRC needs to come down to ground level where the rest of us are. And that's where they need to be. Okay, now nobody is saying, oh, stop advocating for marriage and you should not do any. No, nobody is saying that. But I will submit to you that if organizations like the Human Rights Campaign started investing real money in ENDA and we got this thing passed, what you'd find is that once people had their economic lives taken care of, I think you'd see that they'd be much more willing to step up and start donating money and time to fight for marriage. Because then you would have the freedom, the luxury to take a day off and go to Washington, D.C. and protest. To say, you know what, I'm going to give my local marriage organization fighting for marriage in my state or the HRC chapter $50 or $100 because I can afford it now. And that's what these people don't see, because all they do is, oh, well, you need more money here. Let me write you a check. Boom. Done. Have a nice day. When's the next tech party? You know, I mean, seriously, I'm not trying to be. Maybe I am trying to be, but you know what I'm saying? OK, I think they need people who live at ground level to start. You know, to actually be on staff there and say, you know what, if you want to support the transgender community, here's what you've got to do. If you want to be considered a credible advocate of the working class, here's what you've got to do. Don't do it this way. Do it that way. Hey, you know what? You just spent $3 million in Maryland on marriage. How about we take $100,000 and go fight for the gender virgenda in New York? How about we do a full court press? We get some of those celebrities that appeared in all those marriage videos. How about we do a few videos talking about people's right to work? How about we do that? Because I'll tell you. From this host perspective, you want to impress me, HRC? Show me the money. Show me the money. All right. Well, all right. We are just about out of time. I want to say thank you to everybody for tuning in. Thank you for putting up with us. Thank you for supporting this media, as always. If you missed anything, we will be repeating the show in about 5 minutes after a lovely musical interlude from Mr. Mike. And, of course, we will have the podcast up sometime tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good night, everybody.
Country tears of thee, yes. Sweet land of liberty of yes. Thee I sing,
oh, yes.
Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride,
yes.
From every mountainside, let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation,
yes.
This must become true.
You won.